This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
We like to romantically believe that media today is still what it might once have been. It is not. Media today is something so radically different than what it has ever been that if we think about it in the old ways, if we think about it as we historically have, we become exactly what those who own media want us to be. We are disempowered. We are not citizens. We are not consumers. We are actually just a great big mass of economic opportunities for incredibly wealthy people who have already redistributed most of the wealth upwards. And yet, they're looking out at us and they're thinking, you know, we could probably still shake a little more out of them. But how will we do it? What will we do to get that last bit out of them? I know. We'll give them phones. And those phones will become so addictive that even as they stand or sit or go to the restroom, they will still be looking at the phone, right? And because there'll be some bit of information that they can get. And they will think that they are being rapidly empowered, when in fact, every keystroke that we give them is another bit of information that they will sell to someone else. We are in one of the great horror films of the past. We're in a movie where our technological progress is an economic strategy. And we need to get up, walk out of the theater, take a big, deep breath of all that air around us, put the phone down. Don't abandon it, because it's a wonderful tool and it has tremendous possibilities. But put the phone, give me the phone. Come on, give me the phone. I know you can do it. And look around at the reality of our times. And Bob, who's the optimist of our group, Bob has just given you a cheery little rumination on our moment. But I'm not sure you fully get it. We don't hear anybody talking about it, and we don't have a media that draws us into that conversation. It's a crisis circumstance. So what do you want to do? Should we just hang it up? On the theory that you might want to do something about it, and you might even be a little depressed at this point, a little down, right? Can I tell you, we've been here before and before and before and before. This happens all the time. This is actually, we do a lot of the book is devoted to this. This is really how history evolves. Amazingly enough, I know it's hard to believe, but history isn't all about rich white guys. It really isn't. Rich white guys and generals are not the definitional players in history. What is definitional is economic and social and technological change. And technological change is usually at the heart of it. 200 years ago, we had an industrial revolution. That industrial revolution was every bit as jarring, although it happened much more slowly and ultimately changed things in smaller ways. But it was as jarring as the digital revolution of today in many, many ways. And if you think back 200 years ago, the economic center, the machine center of the world, was Lancashire in England. And the people who lived in the little villages around Lancaster in the north of England, the people who lived in those villages had really cool jobs. Not great jobs, they didn't make a fortune, but they lived in little villages, and they sewed and they worked on little looms and stuff out in behind the house and in little sheds, and they made clothing and they made all sorts of stuff. And they were actually remarkably creative. And then somebody got an idea to get bigger machines, bigger looms into factories. And they had to leave their villages, leave their children, leave what they knew, and go and begin to be pulled into this industrial experience. There's a reason why William Blake referred to them as dark, satanic mills. Because Blake believed that all human connection, all the good of who we were, would be squeezed out of us by this repetitive work in the dark, satanic mills. The people had a very good reaction to that. They got big, heavy hammers, and they went to the mills, and they smashed the machines. They literally broke up machines. They were called machine breakers. They were called Luddites. They had a hero who they referred to as Captain Swing. And the thing was, Captain Swing was a guy who swung the hammer hardest to break the machine. They actually did something fascinating, which we would never do in America. They held CEOs to account. If you ran one of these mills, they actually had people's arrests of the owners of mills. They would drag them out and try them for the economic crimes that they were committing to humanity. The British government did not like this. There's a time, we write about this in the book, there was a time that they had more British troops in Lancashire than fighting Napoleon. They put down the revolts of the Luddites. Because you know what? Every time you revolt against technology, you lose. That is core reality of history. You're going to lose. Trying to stop technology doesn't work. But what we write about in the book is what happened to those who tried to break the machines. They went back to their villages. They worked in those long, hard jobs. And at night, they would gather in clubs. They had these clubs all over England. And they eventually, over time, began to call themselves Chartists. And they argued that there would need to be a people's charter that would restore not just their economic liberty, but their democratic power, that would give them power over those, not just who ran the government, but over those who literally ran the machines, those who had the economic power of their time. And the Chartist movement in England pulled together all of the little Luddite clubs and all of the dissident groupings, and it took a long time for it to work. But they implemented universal suffrage. Every male got to vote. Then they began to extend the franchise more and more. They changed the political processes of their country to make it more small-d democratic. Slowly, they opened the door to trade unions. They opened the door to social welfare state. And over time, they even said, you know what? You should only have to work 8 hours a day. You should only have to work 5 days a week. You should make enough money so that when you work 40 hours a week, you actually have a decent living. And they used this crazy thing, democracy, to tame the Industrial Revolution, which they saw as every bit as daunting as what we face today. And I just want to tell you folks, what we're coming into is going to be really scary. It's going to be really daunting. If you don't believe that, then you're not looking forward in a very clear way. There are going to be tech utopians who tell you that we're going to create all kinds of new jobs, right? And those new jobs are going to be great, and we're just going to do better things. Wrong. That's ridiculous. Of course, if that was the case, then everything that capitalism is about is failing, right? Because the point isn't to create all sorts of new jobs and pay you a lot of money. The point is to get you to work harder, longer, and then redistribute more of your earnings, more of your wealth upward. That's the whole point of it. And so if we accept that reality, the point of what we do has to be to open up our political processes in ways as they have never been opened before, and to recognize that we need to win the future. Now, how do we win the future? The first thing we have to do is have a media system that actually informs us about what's going on. And so the battle for a free and open media becomes an absolutely central part of this struggle. We cannot say to people that a cacophony coming out of your phone is going to give you all the information you need. You need more than that. You need journalism. You need people who actually go out and gather information and provide it to you. But then you also need democratic processes that reflect your demands. We have to break the lie of the neoliberal era. The lie of the neoliberal era, which is going back quite a while, is that we can make decisions about our lives as long as it doesn't affect the economics of the wealthy, right? That we got a lot, as much democracy as you want, as long as some rich guy is not in any way harmed by this. It has been so effective that we actually had austerity. It's been so effective that you people elected Stephen Harper. No, I mean, this is crazy stuff, right? And so what has happened is that we have fallen into a set of narrow thoughts about where we're going. The times we're coming into are not going to allow for narrow thoughts. There is no narrow way out of this. There's a great big way. And I know that, as I conclude, you're going to say, well, that all sounds really good. You know, the Moore's Law thing scared me a little, but maybe we can slow it. You know. Okay, let me offer you this last notion. The last thing we do in the book is actually chart what everybody is already doing. And that's the most encouraging thing. We are not the Luddites. We're not stuck in our little village in the north of England. We actually do have access to a tremendous amount of information. We actually have a huge number of people in Vancouver, British Columbia, who have come out on a Sunday night to try and wrestle with these kinds of issues. You have groups like Open Media and others that are doing this work, Ricochet, this wonderful media project here. All these cool things that are happening. And you know what else? We have living wage movements. In America, we call them $15 and a union movements. We have Black Lives Matter movement in America and similar movements here. You have wonderful Native Canadian rights movements and Native peoples who have risen to make real demands. You have wonderful immigrant rights movements in the U.S. and in Canada and elsewhere. The fact of the matter is, when you start to look at everything that is happening, it's huge. It's absolutely huge. We have the movements we need. The problem is, they're not hooped together. And we, in the book, we take a wonderful phrase from one of our most imperfect presidents, Thomas Jefferson. Jefferson, in the 1790s, at a point of economic turbulence and change, early Industrial Revolution period, Jefferson was faced with the reality that our American Constitution was being ripped up by one of the worst presidents of the history of our country, John Adams. And John Adams was a horrible man who was a petty royalist, and he was literally arresting journalists and arresting political enemies. And Jefferson was his vice president, but turned against him and actually led a campaign to stop him. And one of Jefferson's friends wrote to him, and he said, this is really bad. You know, they're literally putting our people in jail. They're literally shutting our newspapers down. They're making it impossible for us to communicate. They're making it impossible for us to organize. We are becoming an authoritarian state. And Jefferson wrote back, he had this wonderful line. He said, in a little bit of time, the reign of the witches will pass. People will awaken to the truth of what is happening to them. And they will begin to talk to one another. And they will say, it does not have to be this way. And when we begin to hoop all the people who say, it does not have to be this way together, not simply through intellect, but through experience, where they are actually driven by what is happening to them, the loss of jobs, the transformation of our lives, when we begin to hoop them together, we will prevail. The truth of the matter is, everyone who has ever written optimistically about technology, about technological progress, has said that it can and should free humanity to work less, to spend more time with our children, with our families, with our friends, to be more creative, to live better lives. Technology is not supposed to be a prison. We are not supposed to be gadgets. Technology is supposed to free us. And we are supposed to use technology to live better lives. But the way that that will happen is if we seize control of our politics and through that seize control of our economy so that it is our future, not theirs. Thank you very much.